if we are situated in that position, then we naturally experience the happiness that is our birthright. So Krishna explains how to come to this Sat-Chit-Ananda position by engaging our senses in the service of the master of the senses. That is called Bhakti Yoga, or the yoga of devotion, devotional service. Understand it. It actually means to understand Krishna, which, again, it's a big topic to understand who is Krishna. Sometimes equated with that vague term, God. Our eternal relationship is with Krishna, who is the reservoir of all pleasure. Coming out of that reservoir, we cannot experience happiness. When we go to Krishna, who is the reservoir of all pleasure, and engage our senses in the service of his senses, then automatically the happiness of the soul, which is unlimited compared to this highly limited, and not only limited but deformed or contaminated so-called happiness of this material world, then when we actually experience that, then we can understand how petty and futile is this endeavor to enjoy in the material world. Now, having said that, we may think then, well, where's the cave? I should head for the cave and stop trying to enjoy my senses. But that is one famous method, to go to a cave. But better than that, as recommended by Krishna to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Bhakti Yoga means not to artificially withdraw the senses from the sense objects, because that also doesn't work. Because the tendency of the senses is to engage with the sense objects. But rather we should engage the senses in interacting with the sense objects in a manner that that uncovers our natural, spiritual, sensual desires. Now, what this means practically is that instead of looking at some material object that I may think is pleasing to me, so tonight we have pleasure beyond sex. So, generally, a man likes to see the form of a beautiful woman. Who's the most famous and popular film actress in America today? Who?
Angelina Jolie.
Angelina Jolie. Okay. So, everyone likes to look at her. Would we become happy by living with her? Think so? Maybe. In India, you know, remember Rekha, famous Bollywood film actress? And look at the older men. You see all the old movies also. So she was considered the most beautiful and desirable film star. And eventually she got married to some Agarwal fellow. And what happened to him within about 2 months? Suicide, yeah. So, and that usually happens, doesn't it? The film star gets married and then they're famous for divorcing. They have more divorces than Tamils have idlis. Or Sindhis have chapatis. Well, maybe not that many, but they're famous. If you get married, why divorce? If you want the idea is you live with someone, you'll be happy, but they can't be happy. Actually, it's usually the most beautiful and famous and rich who can never have any stable relationship. So the idea that that this will bring us happiness. Factually, it doesn't. But we are recommended to see the beautiful form of Krishna. Now you may say, well, what's the difference between Jolie, what's the name? Angelina Jolie? Did I get it?
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie and Krishna. There's a lot of difference. Krishna's transcendental form never deteriorates. Angelina Jolie has got limited time to be a film star because her body will deteriorate. Brigitte Bardot was the most famous actress. So, one devotee showed me a few years ago a magazine in which they'd published two pictures of her. At age 20-something, beautiful. And just opposite, at 40 years later, and not at all attractive. What had happened? So that attraction of bodily form, it's actually an illusion. It doesn't add up to, even if we can interact with such a beautiful bodily form, it doesn't bring us the happiness that we desire. It doesn't satisfy the soul. Film stars, they must be able to choose their sexual partners, more or less. They can choose who the most... A beautiful film actress can choose a very strong, powerful, handsome, wealthy man, but they're also not satisfied. They're usually highly egoistic people, isn't it, film stars? But that egoism in itself breeds discontent. But if we see Krishna, Krishna's form never deteriorates. And Krishna, he is not egoistic in the sense of wanting to exploit others for his enjoyment. Therefore, if we enter into a relationship with Krishna, then automatically, because Krishna is the reservoir of all genuine pleasure which we seek, which our heart is seeking, then naturally we feel fully satisfied because that is natural. And everything we do to seek pleasure, whether it's going into an air-conditioned room on a hot day or seeking out a beautiful sexual partner or whether it's jogging on the beach or patting a dog on the head or whatever it may be, in everything we're actually looking for Krishna because Krishna means he who is all happiness, and by interacting with whom we experience all happiness. So, the Vedic literatures, they advise us to seek pleasure beyond any pleasure in the material world, because any pleasure in the material world, by definition, is limited, temporary, and the cause of more distress. It causes any activity in this material world causes us to, it creates a reaction. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction on the karmic platform also, which means that anything we do with the idea of enjoying myself, that is an exploitive thought which causes us to generate a future reaction that we have to be born again to undergo. And it goes on, it's a chain. It goes on and on and on and on. So, punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, again and again, birth and death. This chain can be broken out of when we stop trying to enjoy our senses or stop trying to enjoy ourselves on the material platform and simply think how to serve Krishna on the spiritual platform. That's it in brief. That's what I wanted to talk about. Are there any questions? Please.
Everybody in this material world is searching for pleasure.
Right. Yeah.
Everyone in this retreat was such a question. That sometimes people even commit suicide.
As you said,
they commit suicide for pleasure means they think I'm so unhappy that I'll get more pleasure by being dead. It's also seeking for pleasure, isn't it? Even committing suicide. It's a sad state of consciousness. But even that is sought after for pleasure.
People committing suicide because they are frustrated with this material world. They want to end up that frustration, so they commit suicide.
They want to end up that frustration, but they become ghosts. That's what happens.
So the question is, like, when you are trying to become a devotee, and when you are living among the people in a society, like especially in a Western society or in big metropolitan cities, where everybody is more or less in mode of passion, and everybody is doesn't have the idea that the material pleasure is real, is like a oasis in the desert. So how do you manage yourself in that kind of society? Like, for example, when I go on the street, everybody here, like, I come from India, where in India public romance is not that much seen.
Yeah.
And then here,
it's changing.
And here, every now and then I see people doing public romance. Like, how do I? I'm not a pure devotee, and I'm just an ordinary.
How to survive in the Western world spiritually?
In the midst of, like, I get disturbed.
Yeah, right. The story of Ajamil is there in the Bhagavatam, which is summed up in this book, the second chance. I don't think we have that here. How he was leading a very pure religious life, but he only once saw a drunken couple embracing, and then his mind got carried away, and he left his wife and went to that prostitute, and he lost everything by doing so. Then what to speak of us who all the time in the modern world see this kind of behavior, which was previously taboo in the Western world also. By the way, it's not, 100 years ago in America, that would be considered a social outrage also. But now it's become very, again, it's, I was saying near the beginning of the lecture about Freud and the idea of that we should give up these taboos and just indulge our senses. So yes, it is difficult, but therefore we have to take the spiritual protection of chanting the holy names of Krishna. Making our intelligence strong. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about this. That why, the important question of Arjuna, that why do we do wrong things, even we know it's wrong and still we do it. We don't want to do it, but it's almost by force, we're forced to do so. And Krishna explains that it is because of deep-rooted lust, which acts as our enemy. Lust as almost forces us to do things that we don't want to do. But then Krishna explains how to overcome that lust by knowing that the soul is transcendental to this body. There are the senses, the mind, the intelligence, and above that is the soul. So above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. So knowing this, taking this knowledge that sensual interaction is at the lowest level, then we should use the intelligence to control the mind and senses, and in this way conquer this enemy in the form of lust. But it's not easy, and it's not a one-day job, and therefore we have the process of bhakti yoga, which means a gradual process of purification. I've written a book which is quite useful in this regard, on Brahmacharya, which is almost an unheard of concept in this part of the world, but which is very useful. Brahmacharya, it doesn't actually, people think it means celibacy, but actually brahmacharya means spirit. It literally means spiritual life. But spiritual life begins with non-engagement of the senses with the sense objects for the purpose of material enjoyment. So if you like, do we have that? Do we bring the books? He's bringing those books. You can see that. It's not easy. We're not saying it's easy, because those desires are there and it is easy to indulge in them, but the result is that we don't become self-realized. We become more and more entangled in material desires. We become miserable, actually. And we don't attain self-realization. We don't attain Krishna. So it's worth endeavoring for that which is for our highest self-interest. Anything else? Yeah, please.
Maharaj, no, in theory, I believe that I should be a good practice, and I have similar problems to you. But mine is not only about sense gratification. Well, it is that the sense gratification, even though it is limited, measures very passes, you know, and it's got its problems. But at least I feel like I get some little bit of pleasure out of it. And when I try to do more purely spiritual things, then I sometimes I get a good feeling, and sometimes I don't. It's sort of, sometimes I get doubts. Well, is this really what God or Krishna wants me to do? And, you know, to use the Vedic term, slaying the donkey of doubt has never been easy for me. That's where my problem is, that I always have the doubts creeping in. Is this really what Krishna, does Krishna really want me to do this? And I've never been.
Well, yeah,
that's
good.
Well, I do. I've been reading about it for some time now, and yeah, I do. I go that far. But,
that's good. That's
but
good.
As far as being pure a devotee, I fall far short. And it's just, again, I think it's because I have these recurring doubts that I just wonder if you have any, I don't suppose there's any easy solution. It's probably similar to your last answer, but I just thought I'd throw that out to you or at you.
That's another symptom of Maya. That on the path, Maya or illusion will come in the form of doubts. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advises that if we get higher taste by practice of bhakti yoga, then the lower, automatically we'll overcome the lower taste. In other words, if we're actually experiencing the pleasure of Krishna consciousness, then why should we go down to a lower level? But that experience of Krishna consciousness can only come if we apply ourselves to the process. So it's not that we have to fully become convinced on the intellectual platform and then we apply ourselves to the process. But with some initial faith, not, we're not talking about blind faith, but if you see that, if you consider there's something good here and it's worth going for, then if we apply ourselves to this process, then we should experience a better kind of pleasure. So that keeps us going. That means we have to, it's not a hobby, it's something that we have to apply in our lives every day. And then we can start to progress. But at the same time, doubts will come, material attractions will come. So there are many points. We have to keep good association with persons who help to give us strength by their conviction. Now you may say, well, it seems so difficult, then why should we bother? Why don't we just, you know, go and drink a beer or You know, just forget the whole thing. Well, anything worthwhile is it requires some endeavor. That's one thing. Another thing that actually Krishna consciousness is not so difficult, because it's natural for the soul. It may appear to be difficult to us. It may appear to be a struggle, but actually Krishna consciousness means chanting the names of Krishna, dancing in kirtan, seeing the beautiful form of Krishna, and if we become immersed in that consciousness, which is very natural for the soul, then why should we be attracted to anything lower? So we really have to make the endeavor to come up to that platform. But an example can be given that if we're building a fire, we're pouring gasoline on one side and pouring water on the other side, then we're not going to get a good fire. So if we practice bhakti yoga on one side, but on the other side we're also making endeavors to enjoy this material world, it's not going to work out. So it really requires a level of, if we're going to make progress, it requires commitment. Yeah. We're not saying it's a 15-minute day meditation workout by which you become God in 6 months. We're not saying like that. We're saying this is a real thing. It is the real thing. It can be attained and should be attained by every person. It's intrinsically not difficult, but it requires us to take it seriously. Just like if you're going to get your PhD, you don't get your PhD by playing volleyball on the beach all day. You have to apply yourself to it, isn't it? Why do you do that? Because you think it's something worthwhile attaining. And you do get something from that. I mean, you may say, well, we can see something tangible from that. If I get a PhD, then hopefully you should be able to get some kind of job or whatever, teaching post at least or something. So you may say, well, what do we get from Krishna consciousness? Maybe not a teaching post in the university or a job, but something that will give us actual satisfaction in this life and eternally. In other words, we have to, well, just like most of you are becoming PhDs, that means you've set your sights higher than most people. And you have the opportunity to not only go higher than most people, but you're taking it up. So our proposition is go further. Why go only high in the educational field or the intellectual field? Why not go for the highest? Everyone can do that. And of course you don't need to be a PhD to be Krishna conscious. But the example is given, it's just an example that the greatest height we can reach, paradoxically, is by considering, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught ourselves, we should consider ourselves Trinada Pisunich, lower than the straw in the street. The highest we can go is, instead of trying to build myself up, just to consider that I am the humble servant of Krishna. That is the highest position for the soul.
The example you gave, the grass on the other side of the
grass is always greener on the other side.
On the other side. So if that is an illusion, giving an example like that, that means, but do you attain perfection by forcing yourself? Let's say I see the grass on the other side, it's green.
Well, first of all, let's define what perfection is. Otherwise, we're talking about how to attain it. First of all, we should understand what it is, then we can aim at it. Right? We can't talk about attaining perfection unless we understand what it is. The first question should be answered first. You have some idea about how to attain perfection, but it's like, you know, if you don't know what it is, it's like, you know, trying to study history with a Bunsen burner. Bunsen burner's methodology for one discipline, not for another. So perfection means to understand who we are and to act in that position. In other words, to come to our natural position. That is perfection. Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nitya Das. The perfection of the jiva is simply to understand and act on the principle that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. That's it. Then, what question follows from that?
So, then that is the perfection, then the concept of illusion also comes into our mind.
Yeah, illusion means to think in any way different from that.
So practically everybody is in the illusion then?
Yes, not practically. Practically means almost. But, yeah. So this material world is the world of forgetfulness of Krishna, yeah.
So if everybody is in illusion, then more or less devotees can also be affected by illusion.
Well, pure devotees are not affected by illusion, but those who are not perfect in devotional service are affected by that illusion, yeah.
So is the example you gave, the glass on the other side on the other side is green.
Well, that is the nature of material enjoyment. That was the example I was giving. That in terms of material enjoyment, we always think that what I have now is insufficient. Let me try somewhere else. In New York, they'll give an advertisement, see California for a holiday, and in California, see New York. But if New York's so good, then the New Yorkers should just stay there, and vice versa. So, what are you saying, that attaining of Krishna consciousness is, that's also another kind of illusion, is it?
No. But it's difficult to act in the position of not getting deluded, seeing the other side.
Well, just then we have to apply our intelligence, that's all. We take knowledge from Bhagavad Gita and apply that intelligently in our lives to understand that the nature of material enjoyment, it doesn't satisfy the soul. We should be able to see that. If material enjoyment is actually the cause of happiness, then we should suppose that people in this area should be happy, right? But, what do you think? Not happy. It's quite obvious, isn't it? So you can apply your intelligence all the time until it becomes a natural thing. Until the mind is trained to act in a way in which we're always acting and thinking in a manner that is conducive towards developing our Krishna consciousness. It may seem unnatural because we're so much used to being in an unnatural position of considering sense enjoyment to be enjoyment that it may seem natural. Just like that I was quoting. Chok jodi balo lage keno dagbona. If it looks nice, why shouldn't I look at it? If it appeals to me, then why shouldn't I see it? But we should know that yehi sangsparsha jabhoga dukha yoni evate, that the interaction of the senses with the sense objects causes distress ultimately. For this, to understand this, one thing is we have to be fortunate. That means to have some development. Generally, that requires some developed spiritual intelligence from previous life. Not And we have to regularly hear from persons who are on a platform of higher consciousness. And as we hear and practice, then that becomes natural for us. It is actually natural for us, but because we're in an unnatural position, then we consider it unnatural. Where are you from? So you said you're from Bihar, is it? From South, you're from South India. Okay, I just wanted to give an example from Bihar or Bengal. I spent many years in Bengal. Sometimes have the experience in the middle of winter when it's quite cold, of you see that the fan is in the room, the ceiling fan, and you wonder, what on earth is that fan for? How could it possibly be used? It's so cold, and why would you want to cool it, the situation down? But a few months later, it's on 24 hours a day, and you wish you had an air conditioner. But because day after day after day it's cold, then you start to think, well, this is how it always is and always will be, even though you know you've been through so many hot summers. But you just kind of expect that after a few days of it being so cold, you just expect it to be normal. That's the way it is. That's the illusion, that whatever situation we're in, we tend to think of it as reality. If we're sick for a few days, we start to think, we can't imagine what it's like to be healthy again. It just seems like it's going to go on forever. We just start to think of it as normal. When we're sick and weak, and we see a whole flight of steps, and we see someone run and jump up the steps, we wonder, how can they do that? Because we even though we ourselves had the ability to do so just a few days ago, now we don't have. After a few days of not having it, we start to think that, I don't know, how is it possible that anyone can just jump up those stairs so quickly? We become illusion to thinking that our present situation is the way it is and always will be. That's not intelligent. Recently I was quite sick. In India I had heat stroke. I didn't eat for a few days. I had no desire to eat or even hardly to drink. And I saw food, and I was just thinking, maybe I'll never eat. I just never eat again. I just couldn't imagine eating. It just felt so unattractive. And then later, gradually, my health recovered, and I started to eat. And now I'm eating every day, as usual. But that's the nature of this material world, that whatever situation we're in, we think it normal and natural, and the way things should be, even though it doesn't actually satisfy us. That's why we go on in the same stereotype way again and again and again and again, doing the same thing because we just think it's normal. We don't have information of a higher level of reality, higher level of consciousness. So we have to receive that information regularly from those who are in contact with that higher level. And act on that level. Start to act on that level by following the process of bhakti yoga. And gradually our intelligence becomes purified. And we think it normal to be in Krishna consciousness instead of normal to be in sensual consciousness. Conditioning. It's a matter of conditioning. Either material conditioning or spiritual conditioning. Material conditioning brings us to another body. Spiritual conditioning brings us to Krishna.
Can I ask?
Yeah, you can. Everyone's very patiently listening. Surprisingly. You're good listeners.
Some people have material consciousness. Maybe some people are in spiritual consciousness. obviously there will be some people who are in between.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I myself, I sometimes felt that I was in between, felt to choose this way or that way, I was confused. I was neither sure that this is this is the complete. I was not confident this is the actual path toward happiness, and I was neither there also. So it was like a state of frustration. How do you avoid such a state of frustration? Like many people, some of my friends were asking me, they give some bad examples, like why are they doing that? Why are they abusing the church? Why are they abusing? If religion is if religion makes you happy, why people who are in religion are doing bad things? Why are the sadhus running away with people, you know? Like they are giving some kind of examples and saying that spirituality is outdated and like it may not make you happy. Basically they are trying to justify themselves saying it may not make you really happy. And if you are following it sooner or later, you may end up in frustration. So why do you unnecessarily give up for that spiritual happiness when it is not even there?
And that creates doubts in you when they say that.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, there's no doubt that persons who abuse the position of spiritual leadership to act on a level often more gross than the average materialist, they certainly cause havoc in the spiritual faith of people who are trying to muster it up. That's a fact. But the fact that there are some cheaters in spiritual life, or that some who take to spiritual life seriously nevertheless do not persevere on that path, doesn't mean, it's not a logical conclusion to draw from this, that everyone pursuing a spiritual path is a cheater, or everyone must fall, or that no one can ever attain to a higher level of consciousness. If that's so, then animalistic life is the only real alternative. Yes, spiritual life means to pursue an ideal. That's true. We are idealists. The alternative to that is actually animalistic life. Then there's nothing in life to do but to enjoy ourselves. Or suicide. Either physical suicide or the spiritual suicide of considering everything to be nothing, or voidism. That everything is nothing and there's no meaning to life whatsoever. That's another alternative to actual spiritual life.